It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Bellarine Candidates Forum. Now, Bellarine Ward, of all of the wards in the city of Greater Geelong, has the highest population, slightly more than Brownville. It also has the most coastline, and it's the second biggest ward in terms of area. And it's also home to some of the fastest growing areas in the city of Greater Geelong. So to answer your questions today, we've got Petra Gorshall, we've got Trent Sullivan, Tom Rowe, Art Sims, Dennis O'Brien, Jim Mason, Anne Brackley and Lindsay Ellis. Can you please welcome our panel? So up to three of the people sitting here today could be the next ward councillor for Bellarine. According to our election calculator, which everyone can use at mitchellsfrontpage.com, to get elected they'll need to get 13,651 votes, or just over 25%, either in their own right or from preferences through other candidates. The people we have here today represent 8 out of 13 candidates, and we've received apologies from John Van Beveren, Naomi Adams, Stephanie Asher, Stephen McGain, and Stuart Webb. We're broadcasting the forum today live on 94.7 FM. We're streaming live at 947thepulse.com, and our podcast after the forum will go up at 947thepulse.com and at mitchellsfrontpage.com. To those in the audience and listening at home, you get to ask the questions. I won't be asking the questions today. So if you want to ask a question, you can use Twitter with the hashtag Bellarine and get up there on our screen, or you can just put your hand up here in the foyer, make yourself known to one of the staff, and we'll get a microphone over to you to ask a question live of the candidates. Now, the format and how today will work will be that each candidate will get the opportunity to make an opening statement, which will go for 2 minutes, and then we'll head straight into questions from our audience. The forum will then conclude with 2 minute closing statements from each candidate. Now, to be fair to each candidate, the speaking order will be shuffled around after each statement and question, and that will be up on the screen there as well. So this is an example of what happens when we shuffle the order. So completely random and generated by our computer. So lastly, on questions, with so many candidates and so many questions, we're going to put a cap on the speaking time. So opening and closing statements will be capped at 2 minutes, but also questions will be capped at 2 minutes, answers to questions as well. So our timekeeper here, Liam, is going to ring the bell once at 90 seconds. That will remind candidates that they have 30 seconds remaining, and then he'll ring the bell twice at 2 minutes. For audience questions, we're capping those at 1 minute in duration, so please be brief, try and get directly to the question. Liam's going to ring the bell once at 1 minute when your time is up. People have submitted questions online and they've come through in abundance at mitchellsfrontpage.com/ask, so we're probably not going to be able to get to all of the questions, but we'll do our very best to get to as many as we can. This forum is obviously not about me, so I believe that a good moderator sits back, so I'll only chime in if I think things are getting out of hand and if you've gone over time. So let's go to our first question. This comes from Russell, and he says, according to the City of Greater Geelong, population will grow by 85,000 people to 320,000 by the year 2036. This would need some 35,000 houses or units or like accommodation. The Bellarine has some of the fastest growing areas in the city of Greater Geelong. Can you outline your views on residential and commercial development in the Bellarine Peninsula? So if we run our shuffle, and Tom Rowe, you're up first.
Well, the region is growing very strongly, and that includes absolutely the Bellarine. I think council's statistics, though, and the projection of growth are in fact conservative, and this presents enormous problems for infrastructure delivery and how we manage growth going forward. I think they're up by a factor of two. The industry is selling at the moment about 3,000 to 3,500 dwellings per year. 12 months ago, we had terrific sales performance. 12 months later today, the market has grown by 43%. We have challenges before us, but also presents great opportunities. But we need to articulate a plan to deliver infrastructure. If we fall behind, this will just present more problems, and that's despite Melbourne growing at 1 million people every 10 years. We need to articulate a plan, and we need to empower our politicians to get out there and win capital for this region to fund our infrastructure.
Thank you. Anne Brackley.
I believe we need to try and keep the growth happening within the village environs on the Bellarine. We have 16 place names, and in those place names, most of them are villages, and most of the people on the Bellarine, I believe, really want to maintain that village feel. That's why they've come there. And so maintaining the green spaces between the villages is very important. And so that means we probably have to look at the villages becoming more densely populated and looking at different options, maybe cooperative housing or multiple groups living in houses, and things that we perhaps haven't thought about before, or things we used to do in the past where grandparents actually came to live with families so that we all looked after each other. I think there's lots of opportunities in this realm, and trying to keep the village feel is very important.
Thank you. Petra Gorshall?
Yes, for housing, for me, well, there's no doubt that Geelong's going to grow. It's a beautiful place, and people want to come here. For me, I would probably consult the people that really do this all the time. I obviously have some views as far as sustained development, because it's no point putting a whole heap of houses somewhere if you don't have the infrastructure or the services that can support those. You will always have either traffic problems or amenities, provision of amenities and things like that. The Bellarine has wonderful green spaces at the moment, and I hate to think that the growth and the environment wasn't considered as a result of the planning. So, yes, I would go to the people that know all about this and have the information and get feedback from them. They're the experts, not me. So that would be more where I would be going.
Thank you. Lindsay Ellis?
Yeah, thank you. Overdevelopment's a huge concern for many residents on the Bellarine, residential development. I don't know if you read the Geelong Addy just last week, and they talked about the pressure being put on the Bellarine open spaces and greenfield sites for development. Even Council's own planning scheme amendment for Ocean Grove talks about the development of greenfield sites. We need sound structural planning to protect the Bellarine, to control development. We also need to make sure that the localised planning statement for the Bellarine stays in place. There are five special areas in Victoria that this planning statement applies to, and the Bellarine is one of them. So I think it's important that we maintain that localised planning statement, which does protect the areas of the Bellarine, and the town boundaries remain the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mason?
I think it's vital to have a sustainable and carefully planned housing, industrial and recreational development, while ensuring the rural and natural assets are properly protected. I've got a track record of looking after the environment. I've been Bellarine Landcare President over the last period for 8 years, and so I have quite a good knowledge of the needs of the rural areas. Having said that, we really need an integrated plan. We really need to understand how we're going to keep our communities connected. I really support the idea of bicycle paths and so on, but I don't think enough work's been done to set aside the land for such things. I think that it's extremely important. The people want it. The people want to have the natural character of their townships preserved. We can't have unbridled development. There's a type of feeling that there has not been proper enforcement of current plans. There are very good structure plans that may need to be tweaked, but it's not integrated. There is not an integrated plan for the whole of the Bellarine, and we need to understand how the whole dynamism works, how we have a balance between tourism, the green aspects, and the housing. So there has to be limits to development. We need to confine the development to the areas already defined, and we need to remain as good custodians for the environment.
Thank you. Trent Sullivan.
Right, well, I believe this is one of the major challenges facing the Bellarine. It's managing growth. The Bellarine is growing at a rather unappreciated rate, and this it affects everything. We've been declared as the fastest growing regional electorate, and with that comes certain issues. More homes require better planning. We are not redeveloping an inner city suburb here. We are building on and creating new ones from scratch. Our roads are under more stress. Our levels of water usage and management, it increases. Our public transport, community groups, our infrastructure, our very environmental impact all increases. The issue is not, this is not an issue that can be dealt with in a reactive manner. We need to be proactive about this. The issue is not actually growth itself, because that's coming either way. The issue is, in fact, how we approach it, and we need to develop a sustainable and proactive plan.
Thank you very much, Trent. Art Sims.
Thank you. Well, I think it's fairly obvious that population growth in the Bellarine is inevitable. If we look at our current urban growth situation, we've seen a number of estates pop up, Kingston, Kerlewis, Oakdean, to name a few, and we've seen Armstrong Creek on our borders also growing up. I really think at this point in time, as far as the council is concerned, we need to take a breath. We need to pause and we need to take a look at our growth plan. We need to look at whether our infrastructure plan needs to catch up with that, and we also need to look at the roadworks. For any of us that have had to drive in today from Port Arlington or Queenscliff Roads, you'd be well aware of what we already have in terms of traffic congestion. Now, urban growth's only going to make that worse. We also have to look at connectivity to Melbourne. I was contacted by someone who indicated that he has to drive through 30 traffic lights from the Bellarine to get to Melbourne every day. We need to closely consider that. We need to look at a way around the city of Geelong as far as the Bellarine is concerned. We need to look at the effects on the environment. Things like stormwater flows. All these things need to come into effect. And really, I think, as I said, I think right now I'd like to council to pause any more growth in the Bellarine until we can take a look at the situation and come up with a concrete plan for what we're going to do in the future to develop the region. Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis O'Brien?
I'm really worried about this, and I don't think people understand what's going to happen when all this growth occurs. Do people really want it? There might just be a maximum to the population that Bellarine and Geelong can sustain. Infrastructure is currently lagging, and the plan for the next 20 years is to bring in an extra 80,000 people. The local businesses provide employment for around about 80,000 people. The total work population of Geelong's 120,000. That means 40,000 already commute. Bring in an extra 80,000 people and no extra jobs in Geelong, that means another 40,000 commute. Geelong becomes a commuter town to Melbourne. Is that what we really want? It creates problems, huge problems for infrastructure. Have we thought about water? What's everybody going to drink? Currently, we're drinking 30,000 megalitres in Geelong now, currently. In an average rainfall year, the amount of water that falls into the catchments is 30,000 megalitres a year. We're finely balanced. There's no plans for extra dams. Unless we put extra dams, there's plenty of rain that falls in the Otways, but they're sort of an exclusion zone at the moment. That's only water. What about power, gas, sewerage, waste disposal, roads? And the bigger issue for council, growth, high growth creates a cash flow for council, and they're currently covering it by debt. Debt. The administrators have left us with a huge debt of from 45 million now to 124 in 4 years' time. Is that what we really want? That is 72,000 going into Armstrong's Creek.
Thank you very much, Dennis. The next question is about tourism. It says, please outline your opinion on the current tourism delivery model for Greater Geelong and the Bellarine region. and how do you see the current tourist accommodation shortage being solved? First person is Lindsay Ellis.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, tourism in the Bellarine is way of the future. I think we've got a lot of wineries down in the Bellarine and places like that that probably need some low-style accommodation. Every year we see, or particularly this time of year after the football's finished, that a lot of weddings happen in the Bellarine. So we bus people in, they celebrate their wedding, then we bus them out again. Well, we need to get these people to stay in the Bellarine. We've got no accommodation for them, so we need accommodation to take this up. The Bellarine's got a lot more to offer than just wineries, but we need to keep these people here so they can really explore the Bellarine. It's a beautiful place on earth, and I think we need to show it off.
Thank you. Dennis O'Brien?
Tourism's great. The only problem with tourism is that the jobs are sort of low-paid. I think its effect on the economy is overrated, but we certainly need it. We need it for the businesses. It's what keeps a lot of towns going, is the summer tourism. Accommodation is too low. The Geelong Council's got to... All these major events, they've got to organise it so that there's not a peak and then a couple of weeks off and then and then another peak when all the tourism establishments are full in the peak and they're empty in the other times. We need more tourist accommodation places, but we need the cooperation from Geelong Council as well. And the infrastructure again, the roads. We need wider roads around the Bellarine. They're very narrow roads. So we're going to have to put money into the Bellarine for free flowing traffic, and particularly bikes.
Thank you very much. Anne Rackley.
I'm really very interested in the tourism side of the Bellarine. And with our taste trails that we have, with our cheese makers, Corin Blackett's one of our award-winning cheese makers on the Bellarine, and I'm lucky enough to know her quite well. She opens up her farm gate monthly, and she's a delight. She also runs cheese making classes, so that actually brings other people down to the Bellarine for those. We also need, as has been said before, the accommodation. During events in Port Arlington, I know that they use clever, creative ways to actually accommodate people, opening up their homes and having a distributed motel, I suppose, around the people's homes. So that's one way to get around it. I look forward to making sure that the tourism becomes a bigger part of the industry on the Bellarine and help to encourage that to happen.
Yes, tourism I can understand because of the beautiful aspect that we have around the Bellarine Peninsula. I can understand why people want to come here, and it's one of the reasons I chose to live here. However, we have to make sure that it's sustainable, not only services-wise, but also when you look at traffic. You only have to go through on the public holidays the middle of Drysdale trying to get from one place to the other. So at the moment it's already very difficult. We're looking into the future. The greatest thing that I know, we have the Port Arlington Ferry, which connects to Melbourne. So there's another way of sort of actually coming into that end of the peninsula. So looking at creative ideas like that, not just the way things have happened before, we've got to look at other ways, but also to accommodate people. And sometimes it's what's already available, making sure that people know we have B&Bs that I understand. You've got some of the hotels in Torquay. But knowing what's available and then basically working on that. You have accommodation in Geelong because it's so easily accessible from Geelong and Melbourne. Just making the best use of that. But yes, that's something that really needs to be considered, not only tourists coming in at the peak periods, but also at the times where industries and businesses, at the times in winter when we don't have so much tourism.
Thank you. Tom Rowe?
Now, tourism is such an important industry for the Bellarine. It's good today, but it needs to become deeper and richer for the future. And I think we need to find new tourism offers that offer, or rather provide, a year-long entertainment factor for visiting parties. In particular, fishing, I think, could be a core part of this offer. One of my ideas that I'd like to see get up is the establishment of a new centre of excellence in recreational fishing at Moolap, which would obviously service the entire Corio Bay and Outer Bay area. Fishing in particular offers a year-long offer. From time to time I go down to Corio Bay and I'm aghast when I look across that bay in the middle of winter on a clear summer. It was a clear sunny day and there's not a single boat out there, or if you can count numbers, it might be one or two. We need to activate our bay. With the netters leaving the area, the Corio Bay area and the Outer Bay will become a fishing mecca going forward. And I think it's a phenomenal opportunity for us to sell ourselves as a fishing mecca to the outside world. Also, we need to be an attractor of new capital to enhance our short-stay accommodation offer. We need to speak as one voice externally to that capital. It's limited, it's picky, both to private and public sector, and we need a great convincing story. We do have that, but we do need to speak as one voice externally.
Thank you very much. Jim Mason.
Tourism's extremely important. I think we've got some wonderful tourist venues already. We've got things such as the Celtic Festival, the Toast to the Coast, the vintage show, and so on. We do need a diversity of tourists, and we do need to enhance what we already have. We need to look at whatever constraints we have at the moment. Certainly accommodation is one. Certainly I think most people don't want to see any big multi-storey hotels built up around the coast, but we do need to have some sort of sensitively designed accommodation nestling within the various communities. We need to encourage more local production of wine and cheese. Perhaps we can have further cultural activities. There's one coming up next month, Word for Word. Maybe we can have more writers' festivals. Maybe we can have a festival of clever ideas and build upon our clever and creative future. We need to enhance our bicycle and recreation paths so that people can stay for a little bit longer and take their time to move around from place to place. There hasn't been any allocation of land specifically to connect up with the rail trail. The rail trail is a wonderful backbone. Could be connected to the green spine in Mallop Street. There's a lot of things that we can do with tourism, adventure tourism as well. I'm not so sure about unlimited fishing, but certainly there's all sorts of diving and other adventure sports that could be manifested all around the bay and the surf coast. Also, I think we should engage with the Chamber of Commerce and get an idea of local businesses, how the small businesses feel. Consultation is extremely important.
Thank you. Art Sims.
Thank you. I guess when you talk to every second local on the Bellarine, they're going to tell you about how much they hate the school holidays because of the influx of the tourist population. But it's a fact of life that we need tourism on the Bellarine. When we look at housing and accommodation, we definitely need to be sensitive to the local population. But I think when it comes to tourism, we also need to look at this from a broader perspective. We need to look at this from the city of Greater Geelong. Now, there's been a lot of talk about a convention centre, for example, going into the Geelong City. That opens up the possibility of one-day tourist drives out to the Bellarine that doesn't necessarily require accommodation and doesn't necessarily impact on the local population to any great degree. So there are ways around it. I certainly think we have some wonderful major events already, but we need to look at increasing those major events. We have a wine industry on the Bellarine that's quite exceptional, but how do we thank them? We thank them by giving at least half of those wineries a gravel potholed dusty road for tourists to drive down. Now, how is that supporting our wine industry? How is that it's supporting our tourism industry? So there's infrastructure we can put in place very simply to help with that. Lastly, what I want to say is that we have currently 1.1 million domestic visitors that come to the Geelong region. We only have 41,000 international visitors. Now, what is wrong with that model? We need to look at what we can do to provide a large, single, major tourism opportunity for our region, something that I've been looking at recently. Thank you.
Thank you. And Trent Sullivan.
Tourism for the Bellarine is huge. It's phenomenal. People want what we have. We have beautiful wineries, local produce, cheese, olives, so much horticulture. We have huge festivals, music, the National Celtic Festival, the Port Arlington Mussel Festival. People are coming here because what we have is unique and beautiful. I work in real estate, so with the accommodation side of things, I see that all the time. We have weddings at the wineries in the North Bellarine, say Jackrabbit, and people go to the winery and then they have to somehow travel to Ocean Grove or Geelong for accommodation. They can't stay the night anywhere close. We're forever renting out holiday rentals because there is no set accommodation that can facilitate what is needed. I believe council needs to work with this. Council needs to grow and facilitate. We need moderate hotel complexes. We need motels. If we want people to come down here, it is slightly regional. We need to be able to accommodate them, and I believe it's vital that we do so.
Thank you very much. Our next question is an email question from Vicky, and she says, if elected, how will you ensure effective engagement and efficient communications with your constituents? And Tom Rowe, you're up first.
Well, as councillors for the Bellarine Ward, I think we need to come together regularly, the three to meet and discuss issues relating to our ward as well as the greater region, and also make ourselves available as a collective to the people that we represent. That should probably occur at least once a month, perhaps 2 weeks prior to a council meeting.
Thank you. Trent Sullivan?
For effective communication, I'd agree. We need regular meetings, but we also need to have an avenue where people can communicate with us and know what we're up to at the same time. And I believe regular newsletters, updates, being accessible by emails, phone. It's really too much of politics has become electing people who have their own agenda and, okay, this is what I want, instead of electing people who will listen to the community and be like, what do you want? Because that's what the job is. The job is to represent what the people on the ground actually want to have. We are, you know, we're channels, we're effective mediums to bring about what people need and desire. So effective communication, it's vital, and I believe emails, newsletters, regular updates and meetings.
Thank you. Art Sims?
Well, Mitchell, I'm going to give you a plug right now for the Pulse.
Thank you.
I believe that, you know, council issues, they need to be completely transparent. And that means there's no reason why the council issues, the council meetings we have, can't be updated in radio and print media. The Pulse is doing a great job of that now, and we need to do more of it. We need to make people out there aware of what the council is doing. Now, I'm going to mention a word that I like to use a lot, and that's accountability. And we have to be accountable to all of our ratepayers, all of our residents in the region. To do that, we have to be very visible. The other thing that I think is important is that we have focus groups, we have community groups that we continually talk to. This is something that has to be high on the agenda with the council. Now, we can't get too locked up in too many debates, but it's important that the community has a say. And one way we can do that is continue to have forums with the community as part of the progress of the council.
Thank you very much. Dennis O'Brien.
as councillors, I quite like this model, the three-person model for the whole of Ballarat. I quite like that because, I mean, if I'm in it, we're going to work as a team, right? We're going to have agreement on the... We're going to have a joint voice on Ballarat issues before we go to council. We're going to stick together and have and give Ballarat a really strong voice. It's the forgotten rump. The forgotten rump. Where I come from, St Leonard's, they haven't had infrastructure spending for years. They're feeling forgotten. Well, that's got to end. Personally, if I'm elected councillor, I'm setting up this reference group as I go along now, and I'm looking for strong... with people with strong opinions. Whether I agree with them or not, doesn't matter. Strong opinions, and they're concerned about the future. And if elected, I'm going to keep that going and build on it. And I believe in full transparency and feedback.
Thank you very much. Lindsay Ellis.
Yeah, thank you. I think regular planning meetings with all ward councillors and the community associations and groups, like Port Oaten Community Association, Ann's, Springdale, Bowen Heads, I've got one too. I think regular planned meetings with those, not ad hoc stuff, but really planned meetings. I think regular and ongoing basis, at least monthly, even perhaps more often. I think it's a must to engage the community. But having said that too, there's also plans in the pipeline to stream the council meetings live, which I think has got to be a good thing. Talk about open and transparency. So all the information that we can get back to the community, the better it'll be.
Thank you. Jim Mason?
I also agree that the new model is quite encouraging. I think having three councillors working together negates any parochial view of small fiefdoms. I think that we must work together in a collegiate and collaborative way. We need to very soon establish areas of agreement and then work hard to solve or find solutions for areas that we may disagree in. We would need to have regular meetings with associations, the representative associations we have throughout the Bellarine. There are some areas which are not, at the moment, are not well represented, and we need to do some work with those communities to try and help them build up their representative base. We also need to have regular meetings with businesses and other special interest groups. So there's been a lot of talk about consultation. When I move around, sometimes the word consultation, you see people wince. It's because there's consultation without listening. And so certainly we'll, as a group, if we attend, or there are various meetings which we attend or run, we will certainly be accountable together to those groups. I think that perhaps we could have joint tours occasionally hosted by the associations. Initially, we might need to have more meetings to establish a rapport with the people we're accountable to on the Bellarine.
Thank you. Patrick Oshel?
Yes. What I have, part of going round the community, what I've realised that the Bellarine is a very passionate community and have a lot of people who are interested in what's happening within the community. So one of my things is really considering all areas of the community. Yes, the councillors, three councillors actually working together. Also considering the demographic, whether it's young or old, and how they find out about the information. There are quite often very vocal people who sometimes get heard and listened to more than the average person. So having a monthly meeting maybe with various community groups or individuals to be able to have access to the councillors, and also being available for the individuals because sometimes people don't feel as though being part of a group, but they also have something to say. So being open and being available to people, I think, is very important. So it would be my aim to make sure that I am. I'm a voice that, one, people can talk to, and I'm willing to listen, and also that I'm a strong advocate to putting in place what their wishes are. It's not about me, it's about what the community want, and it's time not only that we listen to the community, but also put into action what they would like to have as much as possible.
Thank you. Anne Brackley.
I believe that two-way communication is incredibly impossible, is very important. Over the last 15 years, I've written a column for the Springdale Messenger, which tries to inform the community of my values and also things that are happening in the community. This has been really well received over those years, and people often say that they sit down to read my column and have breakfast as if they're having brekkie with me. The other thing that is happening at the moment on the Bellarine is that the community associations are all working together. They've established four forums for the candidates on the Bellarine to actually gather at and speak at. And the fact that all of the communities are working together, I think, is fantastic. They're looking to establish quarterly meetings with the Bellarine councillors, and I think that'll be really great. The other thing that that I'd like to do is to model what I have already done in the Springdale Messenger to have my own monthly newsletter that I put out. With regard to what we're doing, but also to have monthly drop-in sessions at a local venue so that people from the Bellarine can actually come and see me. I look forward to communicating with all the people on the Bellarine and also across the whole of the Geelong region.
Very good. Thank you very much. Our next question comes from Jonathan in Drysdale. It's a very short one. What are your thoughts on the Drysdale bypass and Jetty Road coming to a dead end? And Lindsay Ellis, you're up first.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a very contentious issue on the Bellarine the last few months, more than a few months. I think we all know that Vic Roads have had plans out there and they've been to the community. The community have spoken, but some members of the community have a different opinion now. So I think it's important that if we want to move on, we probably need to go back to the community, engage with the community again and see exactly what's required. Just because Vic Roads have come up with a plan, I don't think it's necessarily the plan. But I think it's important that we all have a fair and equitable say in it to make sure we get it right for the Bellarine.
Alt Sims?
Yeah, look, it's going to happen. It's definitely a good thing. But we need to understand that we need to be sensitive about the Bellarine, what the environmental implications are. We're still very much a rural community made up of a number of towns. So whatever happens, and we're looking at where the roads are going to be diverging, where the exits are going to be, these questions are very important. We need to tackle it. It's one of the tasks of council to look at that. And we need to do it soon.
Petra Gorshall.
Yes, you only have to travel down to the Bellarine on Port Arlington Road around school closing times just to see what a nightmare that can be. So, yes, it is very important. I understand the consultation has been going on for some time. What's great is that there are other... the experts need to be consulted, but sometimes the community can come up with ideas, maybe with other possibilities. But quite often what you don't know is what else is involved within that decision-making. But most of all, it needs to happen fairly soon, and it needs to be, safety needs to be overall considered within all of those planning. So safety for everybody.
Jim Mason?
Well, it's a pity that we seem to be playing catch-up, isn't it? Catch-up to some sort of unbridled development. There are so many things that it seems to appear as if the infrastructure is not big enough for what we've already got. And now we hear talk now about even more people living on the Bellarine. So we have to listen to what the experts are saying about how we have to have infrastructure to cope with what we've already got and perhaps into the future.
We nevertheless need to listen, continue to listen to what the people have to say. Hopefully we can come up with a consensus and a good solution. Solutions, I think some people are talking about the use of Corriul Road and the upgrade of Corriul Road and taking traffic that way. It's a complicated issue, and good minds have gone into producing these plans. I want to see the maintenance of the rural and the green zones, and I don't want to see endless fragmented expansion. Nevertheless, we do need to cope with the problems that we already have. Small parking places and so on, not enough parking places in some of the in the townships already, and we have to catch up, do some catch up with the infrastructure that's not serving the people as it is.
Trent Sullivan.
Oh, what a topic, Mitchell. The Drysdale bypass, it is vital. The congestion we get through Drysdale, not only our school times, summer holidays, Christmas, it's outstanding and it needs to be fixed. The most problem we're having with the Drysdale bypass is the community does not feel consulted as such. Vic Roads have put forth a plan which not many people are too happy about at all. But we have about three different alternative plans being put forth by community associations. Now, this creates a delicate scenario because all these are worthy and all these need to be looked into adequately. So community consultation with this road is just of the utmost importance. But another topic on it is that people aren't feeling that's been built to sustain the growth of the area. This is a major development, a major road, which is going to play a very important role over the next 30 years. And secondly, how does it affect local traders, local businesses, people already in the region? We want to build it for growth, but we also need to take into mind the pre-existing people and community of Drysdale.
Thank you. Thank you. Anne Brackley?
I've been an advocate for the Drysdale Ring Road for about 6 years. And I started being an advocate when I was told by a City of Greater Geelong town planner that the way to help Drysdale to thrive was to actually take the trucks and traffic out of the centre of Drysdale that just wanted to go through. Part of that development, and we were successful in actually advocating and getting the funding, so bringing $110 million of infrastructure funding to the Bellarine. This is not just to help Drysdale, but to also help other towns on the North Bellarine. And so I've been working with Vic Roads. They have had lots of consultations, which many hundreds of people have attended. And I suppose the diversion of Jetty Road was one of the outcomes that perhaps wasn't perceived earlier on. It actually enables the intersection created that forms the start of the Drysdale Ring Road or bypass to be a four-way intersection instead of it having five roads intersect, which would have made it quite a tricky intersection. We have a number of five-way intersections in the Geelong area that cycle the lights and make it quite a long time that you need to sit there. So it has had a lot of planning go into it, and I'm sorry that it upset some people.
Dennis O'Brien.
I've seen I've been briefed on the final layout. The specific question was about Jetty Road closure.
Yep.
Absolute disaster. If they close that, it's an economic... It's wrong. Economically wrong, logically wrong. A perfectly good road. And do you know what Vic Roads have done already? They've bought two blocks of land north of the garage for 1.3 each or something like that, and they're going to build a road across back to Jetty Road, and they're preventing access from an already existing Jetty Road access. Doesn't make sense. That's the south side. I think, and the people aren't happy, and that's enough for me. People aren't happy, it's not going ahead until they're happy. It's got to go back to the drawing board. Sorry, it's going back to the drawing board. The South Side Council is heavily involved in this, by the way. It's not only Vic Roads. Council was heavily involved. The road access to the schools that the plan they've come up with is abominable. They're going to drop kids off just south of the Jetty Road, make them walk under the underpass up the hill. The narrow road that goes into the schools is going to be such a stressful nightmare for the mums and buses. It's not going to happen. That's going back to the drawing board.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Tom Rowe.
The Drysdale Bypass is a critical bit of infrastructure. Absolutely. Some 3 years ago almost, the state government of the day and the opposition both promised $110 million to deliver this bit of critical infrastructure for the Bellarine. I just find it amazing, some 3 years later, and as far as I know, not a single sod has yet been turned. We just can't have the planning process take the duration that it does before we deliver the infrastructure that we so desperately need. That's point one. And secondly, or second point, is the consultation process with Vic Roads. Too often in my experience with Vic Roads, they have a preformed idea. That's what they want. They go through a thing called a consultation process, but in fact they just want to hear whether their plan has any fundamental flaws in it. Otherwise, they're going to get on with it. And I just think this is just the wrong approach. We need much better consultation with Vic Roads that actually means something, and they do genuinely listen, and they will evolve their thinking, and they don't cast their position in concrete before they get to the so-called consultative phase.
Thank you very much. And we've got a question in from Jenny in Port Arlington. She says, the City of Greater Geelong Council endorsed the Victorian Local Government Women's Charter in 2010. If elected, what steps will you take to implement the Charter's three principles of gender equity, that is, diversity and active citizenship? And Petra Gorshall, you're up first.
Yes, that one of those things where I think women are continuously saying there's an inequity. One of the things that I keep asking the question is quite often, what's the meaning? What do we mean by gender equity? What do we mean by active citizenship? What do we mean by diversity? And that, depending on who you're speaking to, can mean totally different things. So one of the things I think is trying to have an explanation around. Sometimes we talk about gender equity, oh yes, you know, women are just standing up that they've been wrongly done by or whatever. But it's considering both genders, male and female, and where everything relates around that. So yeah, it's just, I think the language, sometimes we say these lovely words, but most often people have no idea what it means, or we think we know what it means. So I think education around that, what do we mean by that, and educating the community with regards to that.
Thank you. Dennis O'Brien?
I'm not personally familiar with that document, so I can't comment specifically. I'm happy to look at it, and I'll be guided by what the people want, and I'll go with that. But women are the backbone of our society, so whatever they want, I'll support.
Tom,
Mitchell, can you just repeat the question? I just finished up on that last answer. I didn't quite catch it.
The City of Greater Geelong Council endorsed the Victorian Local Government Women's Charter in 2010. If elected, what steps will you take to implement the Charter's three principles of gender equity, diversity and active citizenship?
Well, again, I haven't read that particular document, so it's a little bit hard for me to comment on. I do like to think that the gender equality argument and debate that occurs in our society is moving in the right direction. And I suppose from a relatively speaking younger person, I and with a daughter as well, I constantly see greater equality in our society than I think often the media speaks to. I think it is getting a whole lot better. I just don't see the barriers, even in my development industry, for women. that often gets spoken to by the media, and certainly for my daughter's generation, she's just about to turn 21, I just don't see the barriers. So I'd like to think we're moving beyond this point where we keep talking to gender equality. I think we're getting to a point where we're beyond that, and it seems that parts of the media keep wanting to talk to this and almost incite a problem in our society.
Thank you. Jim Mason?
I see the word gender meaning both male and female. I think gender equity really means simply a fair go for all. And so we should ensure that that fair go is applied, especially to young families. If we have an economy where everyone should be working, then we should have facilities to encourage that. One obvious thing is childcare. So for active citizenship, active participation, you need to provide an environment so that people can be active. And I know as president of Bellarine Landcare, and there are many other community organisations where there's a lot of need for succession and for volunteerism. Volunteerism is an extremely important element in our society, and we need to provide the environment so that younger people feel that they can get involved and as active citizens. So gender equity to me means a fair go for all.
Thank you very much. Anne Brackley.
I'm happy to have read the charter, and I'm happy to sign up to endorse it immediately. In diversity and equality is just so important in all decision making, that we have a diverse range of voices at the table to actually share experiences and help us with good decision making. Active citizenship is something that I've advocated for and encouraged people to do for a long time. And people who know me know that that's what one of the things that I stand for and that I do on a daily basis. As I said, I'm happy to sign the charter or to endorse the charter immediately, and I thank Jenny for her question.
Very good. Lindsay Ellis.
Yeah, thanks for that. Jenny, I'm sure Jenny's from Port Arlington and she belongs to the Women in Local Democracy, which is a great organisation. When that charter came to, it was 2010, it came back to the Chamber, I think, about 2014 for an update. I supported it then and I still support it. But I take a good point that Jim makes about equity being equal for everyone, not just one gender, for everyone. That's a good point that Jim makes here. But yet, look, I did support it then and I still support it. Thank you.
Very good. Art Sims?
Well, look, I'm not, like many of us here, I'm not that familiar with the charter that's being talked about, but I'm really surprised in this day and age that people are raising it as a major issue. I know in my own household, I think the ladies are probably a little bit in front, if anything. But I don't want to trivialise this issue. I think one of the most important things is when we talk about women's salaries in the workforce. I think this is one issue where equality needs to be looked at more than anything. But I think we've taken great strides as a community in terms of what we've been doing, trying to equalise the situation between the genders. I was very, very impressed to see the council's approach to this and their encouragement of women's participation in the council. That's all I really have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. And Trent Sullivan.
All right. The three steps, I understand, to this charter: gender equality, diversity, and active citizenship. I believe this should be approached less as steps and more as a permanent part of state of mind. If you don't believe in gender equality, if you don't believe in diversity, if you don't believe in active citizenship, then you have no place in the council nor the wider community. I'm lucky enough to be only 25 years of age. So I believe as our society is progressing, we're becoming more accepting of everyone. Our gender equality is getting better. Our diversity is increasing. So I've been raised in areas or places or times where you're discriminated. I believe in everyone. I believe everyone should have equal rights. I believe everybody should be coming together. Nobody should be discriminated against in our community or left out. So gender equality, diversity, active citizenships, they're just parts of permanent states of mind in how you conduct yourself in day-to-day business.
Thank you very much. Well, we'll go to closing statements now. Sorry to those people that did submit questions that we couldn't get to due to time. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to make their closing statement. They can clear up any issues if they think that they've been unfairly done by some other candidate, or if there's any other issues that need to be cleared up, or they can just restate their pitch again. So the first person on the board is Art Sims.
Thank you, Mitchell. Look, I just want to say that in terms of my work experience with a number of different companies, it's given me the opportunity to think very broadly and decisively, and with my international experience, I've been able to think outside of the box. I've been able to handle the issues of budgets, and like all eight of us here, we're all ratepayers when it's broken down, and we all want to know that our rates are going into the right areas. So council budget is a very, very important aspect of what's going to happen in the future. Now, I think we need to start looking at key progressive objectives, which is what we do in corporations, and I'll mention the word again, accountability. We should always be accountable. My basic platform is common sense. I think we need more of it in council, and I hope everyone agrees. I'd like to finish by addressing the other nominees, if I could. I've heard some good issues today, and I want to thank everyone for coming. Now, obviously, right now we're competitors, but three of us will end up working together. I want everyone to understand that we can't just do a good job in light of what's happened in the past with the council. We need to do an outstanding job. We need to put aside all of our egos, our political and personal agendas, and we need to work on a positive, constructive council. To the voters out there, I ask you not to vote for the person that's going to promise to fix your street light. That's not what we need right now in council. We need people. You need to vote for people that are going to take on the big issues. You need to vote for someone that's going to make a difference. Thank you very much.
Patrick Gorshaw?
Yes. I would like to say that, firstly, I'm very much part of the future planning for Geelong. The committee, the administrators, asked for feedback. 16,000 residents actually gave feedback, and a lot of times it's not much point when residents and the community is asked for what they want for their community and it ends up just being a talk fest. I have nominated because of that. I want to make sure that the people have spoken, they've said what they wanted, and it's up to me and the other councillors to put that in place. So if nothing else, that is mainly what I'm in for. I think, too, we also need to realise the kind of language that we speak to our community. Lots of times, some of us may not know the terminology or may not know what's being said, but it's making it clear that we're talking to all ranges of the community, and diversity is a good sort of part of that, and making sure that everyone's heard, everyone's listened to, and that we all work together for the whole of the community, not just for the voices of a few.
Thank you. Tom Rowe.
The key issues facing this region include the reality of population growth, our close proximity and symbiotic relationship to a mega city growing at 1 million people every 10 years, our need for infrastructure and a dramatic improvement in our transport amenity, and our need for new employment generating opportunities today and in the immediate future. I believe Geelong's and the region's population will reach 1 million people in the next 50 years, possibly much sooner. In my strong view, we need to start planning and acting for that eventuality now. We need people who can take on state and federal governments to seek the necessary funding to build the industries, health and education hubs, recreational attractions and transport networks that will help us reach our true potential. We need people with the creativity and courage to step up with audacious and inspired ideas that will shape Geelong's future. It is these concepts and wants that have helped shape the thinking for my plan. Now, I do have a plan. I call this illustrative plan Geelong at 1 million, a clever and creative place, a 21st century city. Mitchell does have a copy. You can chase him or look for my website, which will launch later this week. The plan will be challenging for some, particularly with regard to the urban footprint required to accommodate a population of 1 million. To make use of the proposed infrastructure detailed in the plan, particularly a new gateway entry into Geelong, which I think is critical, from Point Lilias across to Point Henry, via a multimodal bridge tunnel, the city will not only need to pivot west and north, but also east into the Bellarine. I would make the point, however, that our population today of around 240,000 people occupies about 19% of the municipality. My plan proposes to use about double that, or 36% of the municipality, leaving almost two-thirds undeveloped.
Thank you very much. Trent Sullivan.
All right. I'll take this moment, Mitchell, for some disclosure. Since the question didn't come up, and I believe in full disclosure about every issue political, I am a member of the Victorian Liberal Party. I'm the president of the Geelong Region Young Liberals. I'm the president of the Deakin University Liberal Club. And I'm an executive of the Liberal Party Bellarine State Electorate Conference. I describe myself as young, professional and passionate. I believe in true community representation and I will act as a channel and a voice for the people. The rate of advance as a community we're experiencing is rapid. We need to lay solid foundations for the future. Personally, I wish to give back to the community that's given me so much growing up, and that's my intent to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis O'Brien.
Thanks, Mitchell. I'll just repeat again. Council, this is the way I see it. Council is your servant, not your master. And I'm going to try and convince, if I'm elected, that's the way councillors should look at it too. And councillors will work as a team to deliver the maximum value to ratepayers. And I was just thinking, you know, what do really ratepayers want? The people who bought at Ocean Grove, say, 20 years ago, when it was a country village, are they happy with it now? You know? So I think there is a limit to how many we can put in Geelong, and particularly on Bellarine. But it has to be properly managed. And I agree with what Tom's saying and other people. We've got to find other sources of funding. And we've got to hassle governments. We've got to take advantage. We've got to be practical with governments. Like Labor's in at the minute. Why aren't we getting their friends who are on the boards of the super funds, the industry super funds, ex-Labor people, ex-union people, get us a look in there. Why aren't they investing in regional infrastructure? Why does the ratepayer have to fund loans? There's other ways. Council should be going into joint ventures with local industries. Let's look for other opportunities to increase our funding cake that we've got in Geelong and to make it a better Bellarine and a better Geelong.
Thank you very much. Anne Brackley?
The reason that I'm here today in front of everyone is because of the 30-year visioning process. I'm absolutely committed to the long-term visions and plans and truly believe that the only way forward is with the clever, creative region theme. The other three themes that were put forward of trading and caring and lifestyle city regions, I believe all have to be in place as well. But the only one that took us forward was the clever and creative city region. I'm excited and hope to encourage and inspire clever and creative innovations during the next 3 years. I look forward to working with the other two Bellarine councillors and look forward to working with the other eight councillors across the region. Please vote, and if you've heard some good things, please give me your 1, 2 or 3 vote.
Thank you. Jim Mason.
I also support strongly the clever and creative plan for Geelong's future. I did attend that consultation and I energetically advocated for improved social, cultural and lifestyle amenities. for better youth employment and re-education opportunities, for a prosperous and vibrant industries and business, and for improved public transport and revitalised agricultural markets. I'm a collaborative person. I will work with whomsoever the other two councillors are, and with the greater council itself, to for the betterment of the City of Greater Geelong and especially the Bellarine. I would like to say that the council will have a say on how big the population would be, and if it has to be a million, then I will be not arguing in favour of a million people in this area in the next few years. We have to have a careful look at what our structure plans are, what the clever and creative future might mean for us. And to achieve that clever and creative future, we have to have interim plans. We have to have a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, a 20-year plan, and it has to be structured. I'll work hard for you. If I'm elected, I will work hard for you, for the City of Greater Geelong, and in particular, the Bellarine. I need to have a fair deal for the Bellarine. And if elected, I will listen carefully, I'll consult, and I'll act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And last but not least, Lindsay Ellis.
Yeah, thanks, Mitchell. Look, I firmly believe that the residents of North Bellarine were most appreciative of my services as councillor in the Corriel Ward in the last council. I'll continue to work effectively to advocate for all residents of the Bellarine Ward without any political interest or interference, nor any trace of vested interest or personal gain. I think it's most important that the entire community have input into decision-making of the City of Greater Geelong that will ensure fair and equitable distribution of council funding and services. I understand that there are challenges ahead, great challenges ahead in the Bellarine, challenges like overdevelopment in the environment, public transport and the ageing. So in closing, I think that I can be an effective independent voice for the Bellarine. If I'm fortunate enough to get your vote, I'll work with other councillors for the Creative Cities plan and the city plan for the current city plan. One thing in closing that I will say, we don't need politics in local government. We just need to get things done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. And to those in the audience, please thank our candidates today. Petra Goschel, Trent Sullivan, Tom Rowe, Art Sims, Dennis O'Brien, Jim Mason, Anne Brackley and Lindsay Ellis. Also, a prompt from station management to please support our subscriber fund, which is just starting as we speak this month. It's a great way to show your support to the station to make sure that we can continue to put on events like this, grassroots democracy in action. So please speak to someone in the station staff on your way out to make sure that you secure your position as a Pulse subscriber. For this forum, I'd like to thank the Pulse team who have been responsible in putting it together. Thank you to Justin, to Leo, Nathan, Simon, Courtney back in the studio, and most importantly, Liam on the bell. He's done a fantastic job keeping time. So thank you to all those people. And don't go anywhere, because coming up at 11 o'clock, our Windermere Candidates Forum. But for now, thank you very much to our Bellarine candidates, and back to the studio.